is provided by advisors committed to your financial needs. TheMerrimack.com.
It is an ironic insult. Sent began to self-identify.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The federal minimum wage has been around since the late 1930s, when President Franklin Roosevelt signed a law setting it at 25 cents an hour. Over the decades, it's been raised periodically. In 2009, bumped up to the current level of $7.25. But in his recent State of the Union address, President Obama said that's not enough to live decently these days, and he called for a higher federal minimum wage.
A family with two kids that earns the minimum wage still lives below the poverty line. That's wrong. That's why, since the last time this Congress raised the minimum wage, 19 states have chosen to bump theirs even higher. Tonight, let's declare that in the wealthiest nation on earth, no one who works full-time should have to live in poverty, and raise the federal minimum wage to $9 an hour.
New Hampshire is not among those 19 states that have raised their minimum wages. Various attempts to increase it have been made, but they've run into concerns from the business community. Small business people especially have worried that paying more for labor would mean they'd end up hiring fewer people. Meanwhile, supporters of raising the wage point to other states with higher levels while enjoying more robust job growth than New Hampshire. Today in The Exchange, the minimum wage debate returns to the Granite State. We'll look at the arguments at the national and state levels, and let's hear from you. Should the federal or state minimum wage be raised or not? What might be the benefits? What drawbacks do you see? And especially if you're an employer, how do you feel about a higher minimum wage? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests in studio. Dave Juvet is here, Senior Vice President at the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. And Dave, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Jeff McLynch, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute. And Jeff, welcome back to you too.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and Jeff, I'll turn to you first, starting with the President's proposal from $9 an hour to $9 an hour from $7.25. What's the economic argument, Jeff, for raising the minimum wage?
Well, if you look at the minimum wage here in the context of New Hampshire, what you see is that it's fallen behind and well below where it ought to be in several key respects. First is that the minimum wage is simply too low for workers to make ends meet. Research that's been done by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and it was highlighted in testimony by researchers from the Carsey Institute recently, point out that the living wage in New Hampshire for a single worker is about $9.68 per hour. For someone who's in a married couple, it's about $15 an hour. If someone is a single parent trying to raise a child, it's $21 an hour. So at $7.25 an hour, the minimum wage here in New Hampshire and nationally are well below those levels. It's also the case that the minimum wage in New Hampshire and nationally are well below what it used to be. Here in New Hampshire, if you look back over time, in 1979, the real value of the minimum wage, its purchasing power in today's dollars, was about $9 and a quarter. So we've lost $2 of purchasing power an hour due to inflation. Thirdly, as you pointed out, we're well behind other states in the region. New Hampshire at $7.25 an hour is the only state in New England to have a minimum wage that's only at the federal level. Vermont, our neighbor to the west, has one of the highest in the nation at $8.60 an hour. And not only do they have a comparatively high minimum wage, but they index it to inflation so that it doesn't lose purchasing power over time.
And Jeff, without getting too technical, you said, you know, $7.25 isn't a living wage. I mean, how do you determine what that is? What are you looking
at? Sure. So the research that folks at MIT and others have done is to look at all of the various costs, basic necessities,
housing, healthcare,
housing, food, shelter, and so forth, and try to calculate that on a place-specific basis. This is sort of an attempt to improve upon the federal poverty line, which has been used for decades, but which most researchers now agree is really not an accurate measure of what people need to get by, because it doesn't account for geography, it doesn't account for real costs. And so this living wage is an attempt to try to go one step beyond that.
And Dave Duve, you've testified over at the State House. You've been talking a lot about this. What's the economic argument, Dave, against raising the minimum wage?
Well, I think, first of all, since Jeff and I are going to be arguing on different sides of this issue, I wouldn't say that New Hampshire is behind all the other New England states. I would say we're ahead of all the other New England states because our minimum wage matches the federal wage. From an employer's point of view, a wage of any level is not designed to be defined by in terms of whether it provides an adequate living or an adequate level of buying power. A wage is tied to what the value of the job is, and thus jobs that are more technical and require a high degree of skill or a high degree of education tend to pay more. Less skilled jobs or jobs that require little or no education pay less. They from an employer perspective, that job just doesn't have the same amount of value. Having said that, New Hampshire, along with the rest of the New England states, is a relatively high cost of living area of the country. And what we are seeing in New Hampshire, despite the minimum wage matching the federal level, which is what we would advocate it should stay at, most jobs, the vast majority of jobs, do not pay the minimum wage. And those that do tend to be part-time jobs that are really designed for seasonal employment for students or older citizens that may have retired but want to bring in some additional income. They're not by design really meant to be a full-time employment.
So is the argument, Dave, against a minimum wage no matter what, or is the argument more $7.25 is good, let's not raise it more?
Well, I think from a pure political, philosophical perspective, some would argue the government shouldn't be in the business of setting wages for the private sector. But it is what it is. It's been around since 1930. We know there's always going to be a government set minimum wage. But we think just in terms of what's best for New Hampshire employers in terms of their competitiveness, not just against states in New England, but states throughout the country and other countries around the world, having our wage at the same level as the federal minimum wage makes the most sense.
I've heard others give, Dave, the example that Jeff gave of Vermont. I think it has the third highest minimum wage or something in the country. They're up there, and yet they've enjoyed more robust job growth than New Hampshire. I just wonder what you think about that.
Well,
is there a connection or not?
I don't think there's a connection, and frankly, I'm a little surprised to hear that because most people would agree that traditionally New Hampshire has led the New England states in terms of economic growth. We are the quickest to come out of recessions. We have the highest level of high tech and advanced manufacturing jobs in the northern New England region. Our unemployment rate is among the lowest in the New England states. So I really can't address what may be happening in Vermont, except that I don't think it's tied to them having a higher minimum wage.
And before we get into specifics, guys, Jeff, address the philosophical question that Dave touched on. You know, why should the government get involved in this private sector transaction between worker and employer? Free market economy, why not just let it go wherever the employer and the worker come to some agreement on?
Well, I think just to pick up on one thing that Dave pointed out, I think we would all agree that we want to make sure that everybody is working above minimum wage jobs because we know it's not sufficient, and we want to make sure that we have as highly skilled and highly trained a workforce as possible because that's really what makes us competitive. But in those instances where people have not been able to access higher education or really sophisticated training programs, we want to make sure that they're able to get by. And there's both a moral case for that and an economic case. And if you look at the economic case, what you find is that if we were to raise the minimum wage, that's going to put more money in people's pockets. What are they going to do with that money? They're going to go out and spend it. And that is to the benefit not just of themselves, but the overall economy. Researchers at the Chicago Fed, when they looked at this question using 23 years of data, found that for every dollar you raise the minimum wage, that leads to an increase in consumption among affected households of $2,800 in the following year. So not only does it benefit those households because it makes sure that they can put food on the table, pay their rent, put clothes on their kids' back, but it helps to stimulate demand in the larger economy. And take the case of New Hampshire. If we were to go along with the president's proposal to go to $9 an hour, that would mean that we'd have an increase of over $50 million in wages in New Hampshire. That $50 million in wages in turn translates to greater demand in the overall economy, and that means, simply put, jobs.
Does that assume, though, Jeff, that no employer in New Hampshire says, look, I can't afford this? I mean, the argument that you hear from small business people especially is, look, if I have to pay more, I'm just not going to hire as many people. So your analysis assumes that nobody loses their job because of this.
Sure. That's the classic argument in response to proposals to raise the minimum wage. It's something that's, you know, every student who goes into a first-year economics class, that's probably one of the first things in the textbook. But that theory doesn't necessarily bear out in reality. And if you look at the real state-of-the-art research on this subject, a study that was done just a few years ago by researchers at the University of Massachusetts, North Carolina, and California, they looked at a 16-year period and a really innovative study in which they looked at counties that bordered each other. So they're a part of the same sort of regional economy, but they straddled state lines. And so one area might have one minimum wage, the other might have—
Like the Upper Valley of New
Hampshire,
exactly.
For example. And so that's a really great chance at a natural experiment, because you can get at sort of the underlying economic trends but see differences in public policy. And what they found is when you look at those comparisons, there is no detectable effect in terms of employment. And I think that that's a really important thing to really delve into. And part of the reason for that is that employers have a number of different ways that they can respond to higher minimum wages. The classic argument is employment loss, but there are other ways to respond to that. Workers can become more productive. Processes within the business can become more efficient.
They could raise prices.
They could raise prices, and there are some evidence that there are small effects from that. But overall, workers are still better off.
Well, and Dave, I know you've got some thoughts on that, too. We have to take a very short break, but we'll be back in just a minute. The number for you to join our conversation with your questions, comments, thoughts about whether New Hampshire or the nation should raise the minimum wage is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We'll be back in just a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on to raise or not to raise the minimum wage on the exchange. And at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. Supreme Court and the Voting Rights Act. New Hampshire weather, winter storm warning in effect for late tonight through Thursday morning for all of New Hampshire. Today, lots of clouds, few breaks of sun possible, highs 35 to 40. Tonight, snow arriving by morning in western and southern New Hampshire, around an inch accumulation possible by morning. Lows from 15 in the north country, ranging to 25 degrees in southern parts of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. And the Brattleboro Retreat, offering mental health and addiction services to meet the exclusive needs of police, military, fire, EMS, and correction professionals. BrattleboroRetreat.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, whether or not the minimum wage should be increased. It's an ongoing debate, both nationally and here in New Hampshire. We invite you to join us with your thoughts. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Do you think the federal or state minimum wage should be raised or not? What benefits do you see from this? What drawbacks do you see? And if you're an employer, how do you feel about a higher minimum wage? Once again, that number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And before we go to our listeners, Dave Duvet, I did want to give you a quick chance to jump in on the arguments that Jeff McLynch was making. What he called the classic argument is that employment will go down if you raise the minimum wage. He was saying not so. What do you think?
Well, I think it's indisputable. It will have a negative impact on employment. And we know that from employers who have shown up at public hearings to testify. And again, these tend to be small business, small employers that would be most directly impacted by an increase in the minimum wage. But we also need to remember, although we're focusing on the minimum wage, this increase impacts the entire wage spectrum in that every time you bump it up at the low end, the minimum wage, it's going to impact other wages that are higher than that. They are also going to have to be increased.
Do they have to increase the wages?
I think if you had someone who is making $8 an hour, which is higher than the minimum wage, and you then increase the minimum wage to $9, that person making $8 will obviously have his salary increased to $9, but I don't know that he's going to be happy that he's now at the minimum wage level. So I think it will increase salaries. It also increases other expenses that employers pay that are wage-based, like the FICA, the Social Security tax. The unemployment insurance tax will be impacted by this. Most directly here in New Hampshire, the business enterprise tax, the traditional small business tax, which is based in large part on payroll, will go up.
All right. I know you want to jump in there, Jeff, but I have to bring another voice into our conversation right now. On the line with us is Timothy Horrigan, Democratic representative from Durham, co-sponsor of a bill that would raise the minimum wage. And Representative Horrigan, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. I guess I'd like to actually kind of agree some with what David said, except he said that was a really dire scenario that it would drive wages up for people at the low end of the working scale, not just those in minimum wage. I think that's a desirable outcome. I think one of the problems with our economy is that working people in general are not paid enough, and a lot of the other debates we're having are complicated by the fact that there's the 99% or the 47% or whatever percent you want to call them aren't making enough money to get by. And I think raising the minimum wage, I think that's actually a beneficial effect of the minimum wage. In terms of the effect of it. Yep.
Yeah, Representative Horrigan, can I ask you just a quick question? Step back, if you could, since you're in the legislature. As I understand, there are a couple of bills on the minimum wage. Can you just briefly summarize those for me? Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, there's three in the House, and one that I'm prime sponsor of raises it to $8.25 an hour, and then I'm a co-sponsor with Peter Sullivan from Manchester from one that would raise it just to $8 an hour, but index it for the Consumer Price Index. And then also Representative Tim Robertson from Keene is one that would raise it all the way to $9.25 an hour. And I did speak out in support of the $9.25 an hour one, but I know when I heard his proposal, I thought we were going, pretty far out on a limb because I knew exactly, the BIA would be saying exactly the same things Mr. Juve is saying. So
there's three. One that you support,
yes.
$8.25 an hour. Another for $8 an hour, but indexed for inflation, and another for $9.25 an hour. And you're saying you think all of these are good ideas?
Yes. The $8.25 is probably be a little less resistance than $9.25, although even if I raised the $7.26 an hour, I'm sure I would get resistance to it. And, Chris, the president kind of outdid myself and Representative Sullivan and Representative Robertson, the other supporters of this, by calling for $9 an hour nationwide and indexed for inflation. And $9 an hour nationwide, we have a high cost of living, so $9.25 is probably not probably comparable. Doesn't go as far as $9 an hour would in most parts of the country.
So. Representative Horrigan, who do you have in mind with these bills? We've heard, that they don't really. It's not working families we're talking about. We're really talking about teenagers working summer jobs and retired people trying to bring in a little extra cash. Who are you aiming at with these bills?
Well, most people make minimum wage are actually not teenagers. I think it's less than a quarter of the minimum wage workers are in fact teenagers, and then even many of the teenagers are from families with modest incomes. And I think everybody deserves a living wage. I think if you feel the need to subsidize younger workers, a good model for that, which a lot of people in my community take advantage of, is the federal work study program for college students, where the students get the full minimum wage, or in some cases a little more than minimum wage, but the college only pays half, and the other half is paid for out of federal federal student aid money. So that might be a good model if you feel there are workers out there who just aren't worth the minimum wage but should be working.
You know, speaking of young people, the Wall Street Journal had this to say, Representative Horgan, about President Obama's proposal.
Yeah.
The Journal said, and I'm quoting here, in his latest attempt to increase the minority youth jobless rate, President Obama proposes an increase to $9. In other words, this isn't going to help young people. It's going to hurt them. What do you think?
I think it'll help them because it'll put more money in their pocket. I don't think every business hires only as many workers as they need to get the job done. I mean, even organizations that use college interns, you know, they don't hire everyone who offers to be a college intern. They just, you know, need enough to get the work that needs to be done. So I don't think any business hires excess workers if the price of the workers goes down. So I think it may also draw some young people out of, I mentioned college internships, and there's also other types of things young people do instead of, you know, working in the regular labor market. So it might draw some of them, you know, into the regular labor market, and that would be beneficial for many reasons. But.
And Representative Horgan, last question for you, please, and I appreciate your time. I know you have a busy morning. Three bills, again, $8.25, $8 indexed for inflation, $9.25. Which of these would you bet might make it out of the House and over to the Senate?
Mine is probably the one with $8.25 an hour is the most likely. I think the index for inflation, that creates a little bit of a hurdle. We have to explain it. I mean, I think it's a excellent idea, and as I said, I am a co-sponsor of it, but mine's probably the simplest. There's also a Senate bill which just restores the state minimum wage but keeps it at $7.25 an hour, because right now we don't actually have any state minimum wage at all, but the federal minimum wage applies to all jobs in New Hampshire. So even we here in New Hampshire haven't figured out a way to make jobs not be subject to the Interstate Commerce Clause and other federal regulations.
Okay. Well, Representative Horgan, thank you very much for your time.
Oh,
appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
That's Timothy Horgan, again, a Democratic state rep from Durham, co-sponsor of a bill that would raise the minimum wage, as he told us, to $8.25 an hour. The number for you to join us with your questions or comments is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jeff McLynch, Dave Duvet, let's go to our listeners now. Ron's waiting in Manchester. Hi, Ron. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Well, first, I'd like to say all well and good to philosophize about what the government should and shouldn't do, but you know, I live in the real world. The economy stinks. People are trying to support families on minimum wage because they have no other choice. And these people are eligible for things like food stamps because they can't make ends meet. So you have the government, the taxpayer, subsidizing these low wages. I think that's wrong from a philosophical standpoint. Why should the taxpayer be subsidizing these companies that don't want to pay their workers a living wage?
I see what you're saying. Okay, and what do you think, Dave Duvet, the argument that wages are so low that some workers have to go on public assistance, and so, as he put it, you've got the government subsidizing people who are making very little money?
Well, I would say remind everyone that businesses pay taxes, too, and are also providing part of that subsidy. But again, I would suggest that wages are tied to the value of the job being performed. And if we want to go down this road, why stop at $9 an hour? Why don't we just jump it up to $15 an hour or $20 an hour and really get the economy humming?
Well, and I want you, Jeff McLynch, to respond to something that Dave said earlier, the ripple effects of a higher minimum wage, not just the costs of paying folks at the minimum more, but the fact that other employees' salaries would have to be bumped up, that businesses would pay more in Social Security taxes, that New Hampshire businesses would pay more, what did you say, Dave?
Business enterprise taxes. Which is based on payroll.
So other sort of broader spill-down-the-line effects that businesses are concerned about.
Sure. I guess I would agree with Representative Horgan in that it's not necessarily a bad thing if people slightly above the minimum wage see their wages rise as a result of an increase in minimum wage. If you look at what's happened to real wages in New Hampshire over the course of the past decade, people in the bottom fifth of the income distribution have seen their real wage drop by about 5%.
Real wage meaning indexed for the cost of living.
Right, what the purchasing power of that wage. Similarly, since the onset of the recession, only people in the top 10% of the wage distribution have actually seen their real wages climb. So a boost from the minimum wage from the bottom up would help those sorts of workers. I think it's important to keep in mind that, as Dave pointed out, we might see higher business costs as a result of that. However, when you think about sort of the declining real value of the minimum wage, that means that in real term, employers have had to pay less over time than they did in the past. Secondly, to the extent that the business enterprise tax is rising, we've seen in the legislature a number of changes in tax law enacted in recent years to reduce the business enterprise tax so that it might end up being a wash over time. But ultimately, it's going to benefit the larger economy by putting more money in people's pockets.
Dave, go ahead.
Actually, just two things I'd like to dispute. There have not been any changes that reduce the business enterprise tax at all. There was an increase in the threshold. So some
BET carry forward?
That doesn't decrease the BET tax rate. Furthermore, I want to remind everyone that we're coming out of one of the most serious recessions that modern America has ever gone through. And even now, when we're out of the recession, there are both fears that we might slip back into it, and at best, people are nervous about it. So as they say, timing is everything, and as Jeff has just acknowledged, this will increase business costs. This is not the time to be doing that. This is a very fragile time in our economy.
Well, and we talked earlier with Timothy Horrigan, again, a Democratic rep who is co-sponsoring a bill to raise the minimum wage. I now want to bring in another voice into our conversation, Mike Summers, President and Chief Executive Officer of the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association. And Mr. Summers, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, and especially from the perspective of your members, you know, I'm guessing a lot of small businesses, mom and pop restaurants, inns and so forth. What's their perspective on a higher minimum wage?
Well, it's there's a number of points, but I'll start by just kind of echoing something Dave had just commented on. You know, we are really coming out of a dramatic impact to the economy and to a lot of small businesses. And let's face it, we are a small business state. And so for a lot of those small mom-and-pop operations, you know, with higher food costs, higher insurance costs, higher costs across the board, a lot of them are barely treading water at this point. And to really to throw another wrench in the works like this would certainly have a dramatic impact. And I would even hazard a guess that it would force a number of the truly smallest businesses to potentially consider closing their doors. A lot of them are kind of there now. So just one, it would be the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak.
And that's what they're telling you.
Yes.
Is it just that the president is proposing $9 or Representative Horrigan is proposing $8.25? Are we talking about the numbers or should it just not go up at all? Like if someone proposed $7.50, would that be so terrible from $7.25?
You know, again, our issue actually goes a little bit, it's a little bit convoluted, so bear with me while I kind of paint the picture, if you like. You know, our industry is heavily dependent upon tipped employees. So we have what is called the tip minimum wage. And at the federal level, the tip minimum wage is like $2.13, and it's a nominal fee, really, because let's face it, tipped employees really rely on their tips. It's not so much about the hourly rate, wage. In New Hampshire, we have it tied as a percentage of the minimum wage. So at 45% of minimum wage, when the minimum wage goes up, we give a raise to our tipped employees. Now, on average, our tipped employees are making anywhere between $15, $18, $25 an hour, depending on the type of establishment they work in. What ends up happening is kind of an unintended consequence. So now a business owner is forced to direct funds to the paychecks of employees that really don't even count on their paychecks. They're truly more interested in their tips. And what it does is it depletes the pool of money that a business owner could then reallocate towards their back of the house staff, be it the kitchen staff, who may be making from $9, $10, $11, $12 an hour that could really use a 50 cent or a dollar an hour raise. The business owner is now forced into making a decision that really it's not going to help any of the folks that could really use it the most.
So you're helping people who may not need as much help as others, the
exactly.
back of the operation, so to speak.
Exactly.
What do you think, though, Mr. Summers? You know, the current $7.25 hasn't been increased in a couple of years. Cost of everything else has gone up, you know, rent and health care and food and gas. How compelling an argument is that for raising the minimum wage?
I certainly can appreciate the sponsors of the bills and the comments that have been made, and I'm sure that economists would be better qualified to comment on what it does to the broader economy. I think that the challenge really is it's all about timing. And, you know, when you've got a lot of businesses that, you know, there certainly are bright spots in industry right now, but there are a lot of others that are truly struggling to make ends meet. And I think timing being everything, I think that we have to give industry time to recover. Still a lot of uncertainty out there, and we all see it. You know, we still see the unemployment numbers at the national level going up and down. We still see, you know, some of the reporting done that the economy's not nearly as strong as we hope it or wish it would be. And I think that, you know, we just need to delay a little bit. We need to give folks time for everything to catch up a little.
Is there a middle ground, Mr. Summers, between the concerns that you've expressed of your members over what this would mean for them and those who say, you know, hey, folks need more money in their pockets, and by the way, they'll spend that in the broader economy? Is there a middle ground position here?
Again, I'll speak purely for our industry and
sure.
the perspectives of my members. But again, I go back to my tip minimum wage scenario. And part of the challenge is we're really not going to be helping the folks that really could need the help in our industry. And I can't speak for the broader economy. I'm just speaking about our industry. You know, our servers, you have to understand, as food prices rise, inevitably what will happen is that the menu prices within any given establishment, we've all seen it, whether we go to the grocery store and it costs us more to get out the door as a family, and we see it in the restaurants, that they're seeing the same kind of increases in food. What that translates to is higher menu prices, and higher menu prices, guess what? It translates to raises to the pockets of the servers that are delivering the food, because we all tip on the bottom line. And so with that being said, in our instance, any increase in the minimum wage really penalizes the back-of-the-house folks that aren't really going to benefit from this kind of a strategy. So, again, that's kind of our position, that, you know, we're really redirecting funds of a business into those folks that are actually experienced raises through menu increases over the last couple of 3 years, and we're taking it away from potentially the back-of-the-house folks at the $9, $10, $11-hour range that could really use it.
Okay. Well, Mike Summers, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Mike Summers, President and Chief Executive Officer of the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association, giving the concerns of his members about a higher minimum wage. Let's hear from you after a short break. If you're an employer, how do you feel about paying more for minimum wage, whether it's some of the proposals in New Hampshire, $8.25, $8 an hour, or the president's $9 an hour? There's also a bill in New Hampshire to raise it to $9.25 an hour. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And after a very short break, we'll start taking your questions, comments, thoughts on a higher minimum wage here in New Hampshire or nationally. 1-800-892-6477 is the number. And Dave Juvet and Jeff McLynch, lots of questions for you coming out of that break. So stay right here.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Company C, creating a lifestyle of colorful living with brightly colored area rugs, bedding, furniture, and home accents. Retail store in Concord and online at companyc.com. And the attorneys at Orrin Reno, Global Vision, New Hampshire Values, trusted business advisors for entrepreneurs, business owners, and nonprofit corporations. Orrin-Reno.com. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, robot interrogators. New research shows that witnesses are more likely to provide false testimony to a human being than a robot. Plus, harmony from a shattered region. We'll hear new sounds from Arab lands. Word of Mouth explores the geography of sound today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, we sit down with Ed McKay, Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire. He's getting ready to step down at the end of the week. Email us your questions for Chancellor McKay before the program, if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. And then be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in the exchange, the debate over whether or not to raise the minimum wage. President Obama proposes a level of $9 an hour. And there are several bills in the New Hampshire legislature that would also raise the minimum. Join us with your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. And Dave Juvay, Jeff McLynch, before we go back to our listeners, I did want to ask you, Jeff, about the concern we heard from Mike Summers at the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association, that when you raise the minimum wage, you're also raising what you pay tipped employees who get a percentage of the minimum. And Mike Summers said, look, then that's less money that the employer has to give to the folks at the back of the house, the dishwashers and busboys and so forth. And those are the folks who really need it.
Well, I'm not familiar with the specifics of the legislation that's now in front of the legislature in terms of how it may deal with the tipped wage. I know that I think in past years it's been set at a percentage of the overall minimum. But I guess what I would point out is that depending on where those back of the house employees may sit in terms of the current minimum wage, they may benefit directly from that wage. I guess, you know, part of the concern that we hear from small businesses is, you know, that they're going to be directly affected by this. But when you look at the data, most low-wage workers, two-thirds of them, tend to work for large employers, employers of over 100 employees. So while there may be specific small businesses that may feel that impact, by and large, it's going to be large corporations. Second, another point I would make is that if you look at recent experience with what's happened with industries where you see a preponderance of low-wage workers, retail and industry, leisure and hospitality, if we look at the experience of Massachusetts, which raised its minimum wage in the late 2000s, they have seen faster employment growth in the sectors most directly affected than in the overall economy. So it certainly hasn't impaired that state's ability to rebound, at least in those sectors.
Let's go back to our callers, both of you. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Dennis is up on the air. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a little bit of a different outlook on the minimum wage in that we own a small construction company in northern New Hampshire. We travel the entire state to do work. We're very busy. Have been for the last 4 or 5 years. Our business has grown 20% a year, and the minimum we pay a laborer is $15 an hour. And when we give a raise, we never give a raise of less than a dollar an hour. I think it would be insulting to give somebody a 15-cent raise. With the cost of gasoline, rent, everything else nowadays, how someone on minimum wage could even afford to go to work is beyond me.
So, go ahead, Dennis. Sorry.
I think the biggest problem we have in this country right now is not the economy. It's the perception of the economy. And it's created mostly by the mainstream media that we're still in a tough place, even though the stock market hits all-time highs just about every day. We continue to believe that we're having this big recession. We're not. There's a lot of work out there. Our company is booked through this year. And there are a lot of people willing to work, but they need to make a living wage or they're going to depend on unemployment and they're just going to sit home and watch TV.
All right. Well, Dennis, good to hear from you, especially since I wanted to hear from employers how they felt about this. Dave Juvay, what do you think about Dennis's comments?
Well, part of me says that's great. I'm glad that we have an employer in the private sector that is paying a minimum wage of $15 an hour. And we've been talking a little bit about the middle ground. What should the middle ground be? And I guess I would use his story as an example that we're already at the middle ground. The fact is most employers, the vast, vast majority of employers, even small business employers, pay more than the minimum wage. In setting up this interview, someone had asked me, well, what would you say to the person who's at the drive-through window of a coffee shop? And I said, I'm not sure, but I'll tell you one thing. They're making more than the minimum wage, more than likely. So perhaps we're already at that middle ground. I guess the only other comment I would make is he is doing what he thinks is in the best interest of his company and his employees. I wonder how he would feel if the government was setting a wage that was higher than that.
So that's that private sector argument that you were making earlier, that philosophical argument, getting away from the specific numbers. You know, I wanted to ask you something, too, Jeff, before we go back to our callers. I think it was Mr. Summers from the Restaurant and Lodging Association who raised this point, and it's come up before, that the minimum wage, if you increase it, businesses could compensate by raising their prices. Then you're kind of turning around and hurting the people that you're trying to help. Do you see what I'm saying? Because prices go up, so their paychecks get a bigger bite taken out of them.
Sure. And economists have looked at this issue, and what they generally find is that prices can be one way in which employers respond to these kinds of increases, but the overall price increase is relatively small. And when you think about it, let's suppose that their price increase maybe is in the aggregate on the order of a couple percentage points. Well, for minimum wage workers, if we were to raise the New Hampshire minimum wage from $7.25 to $9 an hour, say, that's a much larger percentage increase. So even if there were that sort of price response, which wouldn't necessarily directly completely fall on those workers, they'd still be better off over time.
You know, we talked earlier about teenagers, too, and the concern that, not to put down teenagers, I've got one myself, but that do they really need to be making, a larger minimum wage? In the past, I remember, Jeff, people would make proposals that raise the minimum wage, but for sort of young part-time workers, again, a teenage wage, keep that at the lower level. What do you think about that, about having a two- or three-tiered minimum wage?
Well, I think Representative Horgan touched on this. And if you look at the numbers, most of the workers in New Hampshire who earn the minimum wage or who would benefit from a minimum wage increase are over the age of 20. About 7 out of 10 workers are 20 years or older. So it's not the classical depiction of a person behind the counter at a fast food restaurant who's got part-time work after school. That doesn't necessarily ring true. Just looking at sort of who might benefit from this kind of wage increase, in addition to it being adults, it's principally women who would benefit from minimum wage. 3 out of 5 of those who would be affected would be women. Over a quarter of everyone who would benefit from a minimum wage increase works full time. Now, we've talked a little bit about the fact that, ultimately you want people who are working full-time to earn well above that. And that's certainly the case, and we want workers to be rewarded for the hard work that they do. But in those instances where they just simply aren't or are having a hard time making ends meet, you want to make sure that they have a floor underneath them.
So then the other side of that argument that, boy, if you raise the minimum wage, you might raise prices. The other side, Dave Duvet, that I've heard people talk about is, look, don't you as business people want folks to have more money in their pockets, then they'll come to your businesses and buy things that maybe they couldn't afford before the wage was raised.
Well, I guess the other side of that coin is, to what extent does raising the minimum wage trigger inflation? It sort of becomes the dog chasing its tail. We raise the minimum wage, business costs go up. They raise the price on their product, people can't afford it anymore. So we have to raise the minimum wage, business costs go up. It could drive inflation. I maintain, and I've always maintained, that there's two populations, well, three. There are those who work full-time minimum wage jobs, which I can't find one in New Hampshire. I'm willing to believe they exist, but in testimony before the House, no one comes up saying they're working a full-time minimum wage job, nor are their employers there arguing that their business is built on full-time minimum wage labor. But there are large populations, we've talked about them, teenagers, part-time students, and our senior citizens who've gone through and worked their life, retired, but want a little bit of additional income. And we can't forget about those people and what raising the minimum wage might do negatively to impact their ability to work.
Let's take another call if we could. This is Tim waiting in Chesterfield. Hi, Tim. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Laura, I was just thinking, you were talking about your child and minimum wage. But when I started out working at minimum wage a lot of years ago, it was an equivalent of $10.27 today. That was back in 1968.
Purchasing power-wise,
yeah. The purchasing power would have been $10.27. Our parents and grandparents were a lot more generous to the young people starting out and the low-income workers in the country than we are now. But I wanted to ask David Duvet, if he remembered, a couple of years ago, he came down to Keene to talk with the BIA. I'm not actually sure it was you. The BIA came down, and they were running a series of meetings around the state. And to a person around the table, all the people who work on Main Street were complaining that these policies that gave a lot of money to the corporations and CEOs and banks were hurting their Main Street businesses because they depended on people having cash in their pockets to buy an extra cup of coffee or buy another gallon of gasoline at the gas station. And they weren't worried about low-income. They were worried about the low-income workers not having enough money to spend, and that was what was hurting their businesses.
So sort of,
we're in a demand-side recession now. The businesses and corporations have plenty of money in the bank, but they can't invest until they know that people are going to purchase things, and the purchasing power of the bottom 80% has been reduced a great deal over the last few decades.
So different interests between big and small businesses. Dave, you want to comment? Small businesses on Main Street want folks to have more cash. Big businesses are more looking at that bottom line.
Well, if the small businesses on Main Street truly believe that and they really want to see that happen, there's nothing stopping them from raising the wage of their employees to accomplish that. That's not the message I get from most small businesses, but I guess I'm willing to believe they're out there and they have the ability to raise wages now. They don't need the government to tell them to.
Tim, thanks a lot for that call. And here's an email from another Tim who says, hypothetical situation. Say a small business has 50 employees making $7.50 an hour. Then they're required to raise everyone's pay to $9 an hour. In order for the company to keep the same payroll level, it will have to fire 9 people. How does this help anyone, especially people lose their jobs and go on unemployment? That's Tim's first point. His second point is, second, if the company raises the price of what they sell to compensate for increased payroll, then the minimum wage worker who is working $7.50 and paying $2 for the product is now making $9 and paying $3 for the product. In the end, Tim says there's no net benefit. The logic that this will help people because it puts more money in the minimum wage worker's pocket is short-sighted at best. We talked just a couple minutes ago about that price effect, Jeff McLynch, and whether that would happen or not. What about Tim's first point, though? He feels that employers would have to fire folks if they have to increase their payrolls by that much.
Well, again, I guess I would just revert back to sort of some of the studies that have been done on this subject. And when you look at the total increase in wages that might result from an increase in minimum wage along the lines of what we've seen in the recent past, it's a very small increase relative to the total wages that employers pay. And so what they need to do is to be able to sort of adapt to that change. And they can adapt in a variety of ways. Again, the person who emailed suggests that they might fire 9 people to do that. We've talked about the fact that they might change prices slightly to accommodate that. They don't have to do just one thing. They might look to ways to improve their internal processes to try to get the most, even more out of their workers than they already are. What we've seen from prior minimum wage increases in other cities and states is that there's a very sharp reduction in employee turnover, which can be quite costly to employers when you think about the cost that goes into recruiting and training new employees. That's a real benefit to employers. Also that there's just greater productivity among the workers that are already there. And lastly, as we've sort of talked a bit about this morning, is that employers are likely to see an increase in demand and they're going to respond to that demand accordingly. They're going to see an increase in demand because
demand for
their product, overall demand in the economy,
because people
are going to have more money in their pockets.
Although we don't know, and this is Tim's second point, we don't know how much prices would go up.
Well, if he
on the other side of that.
I think he suggested that products would rise from $2 to $3, a 50% increase in prices. I don't think that that's likely to happen.
You know, I want to return to something that we touched on a little bit earlier and ask both of you, what do you think? And Dave, too, first. So all these proposals, again, $8.25 an hour, $8 index for inflation, $9.25 an hour. Those are the three proposals in the New Hampshire House, plus President Obama's proposal for $9 an hour. Is there any middle ground here, Dave, between the concerns you've outlined and the folks who want to raise the wage by all these different levels? Middle ground.
Well, I think at the state level, raising our minimum wage above what the federal minimum wage is will put us at a competitive disadvantage to those 30 other states that are out there that match the federal minimum wage. If public policy-wise, this is the direction we want to go as a country, and I think it's a mistake. I don't think it's good for the economy. But if it's going to happen, I think it should happen at the federal level so at least all states are affected the same way. We'll still be at a competitive disadvantage for other countries that are paying less wages, but at least from a New Hampshire perspective, we'll be treated the same as other states.
So it's not really a middle ground, but it's the lesser of two evils in in your
opinion. Guess. Again, yeah. I wouldn't advocate for the increase
thrilled.
At the federal level either, but if it's going to happen, that's where it should happen.
What do you think, Jeff? Middle ground?
I think at minimum we want to make sure that we get back to where we had been in New Hampshire in terms of the minimum wage and in terms of its real purchasing power and making sure that we don't continuously fall behind. So I think one of the bills that's now before that's now at the State House would introduce the notion of indexing the minimum wage to inflation. And that's something that 10 states now do. I think that if you were to have a modest increase in the minimum wage back to where we had been in real terms and then index it, that might be some middle ground to ensure that we're not continually falling behind. In terms of whether that gives us an advantage or disadvantage, I really don't think that's any sort of competitive disadvantage when you think about the fact that we now have the lowest minimum wage in the region. And the areas that have a preponderance of minimum wage workers are service sector industries like leisure and hospitality and retail. We're not going to try to compete with India when we try to sell a shirt at the Gap. You can't go over to India, buy a sweatshirt, and come back home. Similarly, if I want to go out for a meal, I'm not going to go to Bangladesh. I'm going to go down the street to my local restaurant.
Well, and from philosophy to politics, which one do you think, Jeff, how do you think any of these bills from the House will do in the Senate?
I think that we'll have a very robust debate about the minimum wage going forward.
What do you think, Dave?
I think indications are the Senate is already going to defeat their minimum wage bill, which leaves it at the same level as the federal government. So I think it would be an uphill fight for those who are trying to increase the wage.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. I want to thank both of you very much for coming in. It's good to see you, Dave Juvay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave Juvay, Senior Vice President at the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. Jeff McLynch, good to see you too.
Thank you.
Jeff McLynch, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.